Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcasting, God, whatever you want to call it. This is episode 31, and as always, I have here the one and only Michael Kimsel. Hello, Michael.
Good morning. I am too legit to quit today.
Not just today, as always.
All the time, yes. I'll push this back so my head's not so big in the... Hello, good morning. Yeah,
you have a big head because you think a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, as always, we have lots of interesting JavaScript topics to talk about, things that have been happening lately. We are recording it a bit late in the month because I was not able to record near the end of the month. I was at an event, and so I had to postpone. But so we have even more topics to talk about as before. But so let's move on and
rock on. There you go.
And start with a topic. Here, that let me start the screen sharing because it's better if I'm able to reach that window. For some reason, it is not appearing here. Oh, okay, there it is.
Ooh, there it is.
Okay. Well, basically, this is an article that talks about something that I always struggle to figure what would be the ideal way to do it properly in JavaScript, which is to check if a variable is not initialized or has some undefined value. And I remember that when I started a JS class site, I published an article telling people how they could write classes in a way that they are defined more or less similarly to other languages. And in the example, I have some notions of the classes and the objects, namespaces, whatever would be the correct name to call them in JavaScript. And there was a comment by user of the site just bringing to the attention that the undefined value or constant or whatever is the correct name to call that identifier would not be correct to use to compare to check if it is a variable is defined or not, because you could always redefine the undefined and somehow change the behavior that would be intended by check by comparing with the undefined value. And one thing that this article brings up is that when ECMAScript 5 made it undefined a property of the global object, and that it could not be changed, unlike previous versions. Michael, when you need to compare to determine if a variable is not defined, what is your preferred way? What is your common way to do it?
I think I have typically looked for the string undefined. Probably something I copy and pasted from a Google search probably in 2006 or maybe even earlier. And it's always been an odd thing, an odd way to deal with this. I don't think it was type of. I'm looking here at the second one saying type of X triple equals undefined. I think I was doing double equals unquote undefined unquote.
Yeah. Well, I dropped the ear. I lost part of what you said in the beginning. This article, I'm trying to restart the screen sharing here.
Well, it's always been a strange problem for me and probably for other people too, because there are different ways to deal with this. And the fact that you could change the behavior of checking for undefined in earlier versions was even stranger. So...
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Well, nowadays I'll still do that. I compare to undefined it because I don't know if there are still many browsers that use older versions of JavaScript.
IE 5, IE 6, probably, but
well, all those three people that use those
yeah.
browsers.
Yeah.
And, well, other than that, I don't know if there would be what could be the risk of somebody changing the value of undefined and somehow change the behavior of your.
Well, if that's what you were checking for, if it's undefined, then establish an initial value for it, and if you change the undefined behavior that didn't return what you should be expected, then you'd be resetting values. And that's just one example. It's just odd. It's almost like being able to change false and true somehow.
Yeah.
I do say, I hadn't thought about this, but I like the triple equals. I like X technique 2 here in section 1. X triple equals void 0. I like that because void ignores the operand and always returns undefined. It means void 0 will always evaluate to undefined. I like that.
Yeah.
That's probably the best
I never
approach.
Seen this one. Well, I never seen this void 0. What does that mean? Is that converts?
It just says right there that void will evaluate the operand, or it takes an operand, whatever it's doing to it, it ignores whatever result and always returns undefined. That must be what void does. So...
Oh, I see. So whatever is the undefined symbol, defined or not, this always evaluates to the real undefined value.
Yeah.
I think. Well, the article recommends that you use the triple equal undefined, which is what I've been using. Previously, I used to do the type of... type of variable compared to the undefined string, but
yeah.
I don't remember why, but I think I use one of those JS hint or JS lint, and for some reason I was persuaded to change. But I really do not recall what was the reasoning for that.
How people did it.
Well. Anyway, the recommendation of this article is to use that. And, if you are wondering why, better take a good read of this article. And so we can then figure what is best to use on our scripts. Well, anyway, moving on to the next topic. Let me just switch here because, sorry, I was paying attention to the other window, and then I no longer have the topic here. Well, this turn is a code analysis. I think it is a tool, right? That can be used to figure if you are. From what I understood, to figure if your programming is correct and makes sense. I don't know, Michael. Have you tried this turn tool?
I have not. Frankly, over my head. In terms of that article itself. Now, if you go to turnjs.net, there's a demo. You may want to bring that up. There's a demo that you can use, which gives you a little bit more, not much, but actually I'm pulling this up right now. It may not be working in, I'm trying to do it in Firefox Nightly. It may not be working there appropriately because I'm on a nightly build. It's another node thing. Yeah.
Is that a bad thing?
Pardon?
Is that a bad thing, being another node thing?
Oh, no, I don't mean it's necessarily a bad thing. It's just...
you just don't use it.
Yeah, well, it's just like, okay, that's how he's doing some of this. Okay.
Okay.
I really can't speak too much about this. It's a bit high... I mean, I was going through the article, and I kind of... I get mechanically what he's doing, but I never saw output, and I wasn't able to click or connect what was going into what the value of the output would be. But I don't think I work at this level where you need to have this much of an understanding of what's going on. But you should always have an understanding of what's going on. I don't in JavaScript as much as I should. So.
Yeah, it's always useful for when you want to figure if probably spot some bugs earlier than usual, which the usual is to, oh, something is not working. And but if you have a tool that can be used to detect bugs earlier than they go into your code goes into production, I think it would be useful than having to figure the bugs later on when you probably may have caused some damage or not, but there is always the chance things like this happening.
True. However, this is targeted at a different person than me, a different developer, because I'm not. I do quote unquote advanced stuff in JavaScript sometimes, but I'm doing it only to the extent that I'm using other people's libraries. This probably would make sense for people that are doing deep, extremely complex things, or building the tools that let simpletons like me do the complex things.
Yeah.
It's just an add-on. Yeah.
Something that may help you to figure any bugs that you may have. Like, for instance, what you can do with JS Hint and JS Lint. Since I got aware about those tools, I started using them more frequently, at least once before I publish code in JS classes and any components that I have been publishing or updating. And talking about explaining your code, there is also an interesting project that I found, Explain.js. Let me screen share it here. I hope that Google Hangouts does not crash on me again. Okay, Explain.js.
You got it. I've got it up. If you don't, yeah. But
no, it's okay. Every time I try to pick a screen to share, it adds another window and I miss the right window.
Okay.
And here they have basically a page on which they let you try this tool. And let me paste the URL here. I thought it would be to paste the code, or maybe I saw this before, but I think okay. For instance, this code here, it is part of a component that I use, so it just takes the code on the script that I put the URL, and it puts the comments on the left side and the code on the right side. So
yeah.
The hope is that the comments are used to explain the code. In this case, I pasted the whole license in the code because this is not minified. Well, if it was minified, probably wouldn't have any comments, I think. Well, anyway, this is probably not a very good, not very useful for me because I don't put many comments or any comments at all because I try to have a programming style on which the code tends to be self-explanatory. I try to use verbose names in English. So let's see.
Scroll down a bit. Though.
They have some examples, right?
Yeah, you could hit Ember or Angular or something. The interesting thing that I think about this is it's interesting to me because I don't think I've seen this done before.
Right.
As obvious as this looks, maybe I have, and I can't remember, I certainly haven't seen a web-based thing like this. The really interesting thing to me is, or would be, if IDEs had views like this. And maybe they do, and I've just missed it, but it would be pretty slick if this was an alternate view, so I could have my code and comment side by side rather than top to bottom. I'm always conscious of, I always have a lot more width on my screen than I do height. I'm always constrained for height, so if things could be moved side by side, I could see more code on the screen and more comments. I think it's a neat idea.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting to see this used, this side by side approach maybe adopted more.
Yeah, well, as I said, it's probably not the best. It's not as useful for my code because I don't put many comments, but for people that comment their code a lot, it's probably much more useful. Michael, what is your commenting practice?
Oh.
Do you comment a lot or maybe not?
Well, thinking of just about coding in general, I have moved to trying to do more comments. Explanatory comments, done a bit more on the testing side in the past several months, automated tests, things like that. So tried to make things more, as you were saying before, sort of understandable and self-documenting, self-explanatory, but I like comments, and I like to think that I'm doing a better job of it now than I was 5 years ago.
Yeah, and well, I think my practice will never change because I got used to this. Not commenting much, although I use comments to embed. I have defined a format to embed documentation in the original source code of the JavaScript or even PHP. It's a sort of a XML format. It's not very pretty, but. It's I have a tool that extracts that documentation, and it can extract a lot of details that then produces readable documentation in different formats that are useful. And
I wish I could remember the name of the tool, but I mean, 2 weeks ago I saw something. 3 weeks ago. And it was a plugin for Visual Studio that would allow you to attach images into source code, and it would embed it in a comment or embed a reference to a file. But when you were looking at it through the plugin in the editor, you could see the image there, in line with the code. So this is the diagram of how the flow should go. This is sample output from this method. That sort of thing.
I think I also saw that, but I also forgot the name.
I can't remember the name either, but it's amazing that we still are so... text is great, but we're still so text-oriented, and I don't know if or when the idea of embedding more multimedia metadata will ever take off. But anyway, I like the explain thing.
Yeah, well, talking about code analysis and... as we mentioned about Turn, there's a new release of jsint out, jsint 2.0, and basically, well, I did not have an opportunity to try it and see what are the differences in practice. They are listed here in this page.
We looked at this. Yeah, we looked at this a little bit ago. ECMAScript 5 support is... Yeah. And ECMAScript 6, somewhat.
Well, what are the main differences that you noticed that can make the tools better than or it already is?
Well, I'm looking here. It looks like just reading this. It looks like there's some support for specifically Firefox or Mozilla extensions and. There's some more command line changes. Looking for a .js hint file.
Yeah.
But it also probably the biggest one at the end is they're trying to change the release cycle, or the release schedule to be faster.
Oh yeah.
So
I have not noticed that part.
Just now, I don't know exactly what faster means, but if they're looking at maybe monthly, that would be a tool that you'd be, just like we upgrade our browsers now, many of us upgrade our browsers probably, if not weekly, maybe monthly, you're getting a new version of something, or you're trying new versions. It may be that JS Hint is now going to try to keep in line with browser release schedules more. I'm just reading that in. They're not actually saying that.
Yeah. Well, for me, the tool is already great. It's very helpful. Both JS Lint and JS Hint, I try to pass my code to those tools to detect something that was not intended.
Mm.
It also changed my my programming style. And now I put more brackets around the single statements, like those after if conditions. And a new thing that I noticed they added is this new pragma, which is basically a comment that is to signal JS Hint to not give warnings, not give specific warnings that you about things that you are well aware that are intended in your code. They are not accident, and they do trigger some warnings, and I'm not sure if this was present before. I think there were already option, a way to pass default options to.
Yeah, there was.
Yeah.
Like maybe just a variation of an option was added.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, I think this is great. The tool is getting very mature, and I don't know what else. You could want from these tools, because they are already great. Any features that you miss from JS Hint and JS Lint?
I think it should email everybody on the team and maybe email some cat pictures. That would be helpful.
Oh, cat picture would be awesome.
Yeah.
You are right. That feature is definitely missing.
See, whenever you think that an app can't get better, I can tell you how to make it better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, cat picture will help.
That was interesting. There's actually these next two topics that you brought up are interesting to me because they're both kind of side. I mean, they're not really the same thing, but both using Canvas.
Yeah.
This GIF.js or GIF.js, something to let you build animated GIFs to just piece together multiple.
Right.
Frames is interesting. I'm not sure I've seen one of these before. Probably have, but it's not coming to mind. That's interesting. Mm. And it uses Canvas. Yeah.
Well, so let me show it here, the page. What you are talking about first is the GIF.js. What is the right way to pronounce GIF? Is it GIF or GIF?
I say GIF, but I heard the on the radio last week, it's supposed to be GIF. The guy who invented the format pronounces it GIF. So
yeah,
I still think he's wrong.
Exactly, as if that matters.
And, yeah.
And more importantly, you heard it on the radio, and the radio is very relevant these days.
Yes. Okay.
Well, anyway, now seriously. This is a library that is able to build GIF streams from pictures. It can extract frames from canvas elements, and it can even compose animated GIF pictures. And well, I was wondering what happens after this rendering call here. Does it save it to some data, some string variable, or does it upload it to the server? Because this
no, right, it's saying right there, gif.render. It's going to trigger because there's a GIF on finished. So it's going to once the rendering is finished, it's going to trigger that callback, which is function. It's going to pass the blob, and then it's opening up.
Oh, right.
I mean, there's more to it than that, but that's what their demo is doing. Yeah, that's what the demo code is doing. Yeah.
So it creates a blob. Oh, I see.
Yep.
It creates.
There you go. That's it.
Creates a URL. Oh, this is intriguing. Oh, What kind of URL is that?
I think it's a data URI. Data.
Yeah, you are right.
I know. I
forgot that. I totally forgot that you can generate URLs from data strings.
Yep.
And but this probably would be more useful if you, well, I don't know. I think if you could somehow upload it to the server, and so we probably would tackle this with a AJAX object, XML HTTP request object, and upload it to the server. But well, this is great because well, Canvas, yeah. you can generate a PNG from Canvas, right?
So I think so. Yeah.
So you can with this library now you can generate data streams in GIF format, so you can upload the upload or even show in the browser with the data URLs.
Yeah.
And now you can dynamically animate your cats.
I could.
Yeah.
And on another Canvas note, using some other aspect of Canvas, it kind of leads into the next article that you had from
exactly.
Yeah. Do you see it? Yeah, here. Oh, you've got it there. I had it shared as well here, too. This article from Raymond Camden.
Yeah.
About, I think it's Canvas related. I thought it was when I'd first gone through it. Maybe not. Maybe I got this wrong.
Well.
But the idea of not, maybe I just got this wrong. Oh. Yeah, this was just somebody's comment here is that about grabbing a data URL from Canvas, but I think he was talking a little bit more about you can just use, at least with WebKit now, current WebKit, you can say input type equals file and then capture equals camera, and you can trigger a camera taking a picture or loading a picture from the roll, the image roll.
Yeah, but I suppose this requires proper support from the browsers. Which browsers support that parameter of camera? Probably.
What was the question?
It was cut. I was wondering about the browser support.
Oh wait! No, this is where the camera is because, or not camera, the canvas. Because what you're getting from the camera is something you're still getting a data URI, and you can deal with that with you're getting a data URI which you would get from Canvas, but you're getting a data URI which can then be passed to an image tag. This is specifically, he's talking about iOS here, but I believe that you can do this in current Android as well too, I think. But even without taking the picture, you could, I know with iOS 6, I don't think I tried on 5, but I know with 6 you could do file upload. If you even just had a regular file upload thing, one of the options when you click that on iOS is that it would say what you could go to your camera roll and take a choose a picture from that. This is actually triggering the camera and then giving you the data, and then you could AJAX upload it or post it or whatever. But it's nice to see that this is slowly coming around finally in iOS and ideally better ways of triggering this in Android too. It was, the file upload support was nice in Android, but I wasn't sure if you could trigger an actual camera from a web page before. It looks like you can now.
Yeah, and what this article says that you can do this without calling the camera API from
the web. Yeah, because the browser is calling the camera API now for you on your behalf. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the way I thought PhoneGap worked is that it used the underlying browser available in the mobile device, right?
When it needed to, but for things like the camera, it was writing code that used, it was compiling code that used native camera drivers or camera APIs. But now a little bit more of that is exposed. The actual trigger taking a picture and getting that data picture back is now directly from the browser.
So you can just serve HTML5 pages from your server and have them
take a picture. Yep.
Well support, but it still depends on the version of the OS in the.
Yeah, though, you know, I think newer Android devices are getting updated more regularly, and it does seem like quite a lot of people in the iOS world upgrade to latest versions on a regular basis.
Right.
Yeah.
And what I was wondering is about the non-mobile devices. I could not.
I haven't tried this on a non-mobile. I don't know if this would trigger a camera. If you have a webcam, it would trigger pop-up. Probably not.
You probably need a more recent version of Chrome or Firefox, or I don't know if you can count anything on anything.
You got the code there. Try it. See what happens.
Yeah.
Not right now, though. Not right now.
No, of course not. Well, this is always interesting because with these advances, we can enhance the potential of applications. And
yeah.
With this support in the browsers, in the mobile browsers, you rely less on native applications.
Yeah.
Although it's always better to develop native applications if you want to take the full potential of the mobile device.
I don't, but that's just me.
You don't. You tried to develop any native applications?
One a couple of years ago, and I won't be doing it again anytime soon.
Was it that bad?
No, just I'll fill you in. I'll regale you with my travails next month. Wanted to touch on one brief thing. A couple months ago, I think we talked about ASMJS, which is I'm sharing my screen. Can you see my shared screen?
Yeah.
This is an article I found a couple weeks ago, and that is some benchmarks that somebody had done showing the same concept code compiled to run as native code on a machine and then as JavaScript in Firefox and then Firefox in ASMJS compiled. ASMJS is a smaller subset of JavaScript, and if you can compile towards that, it can... it can run it and deal with it much, much, much faster. We can see here for some of the benchmarks, the orange and the blue are close, or the blue is at least a lot closer than the red, which is the native Firefox. Hopefully you can also jump in, just go to the page as well, too. I just encourage people that are really into, if you were at all interested in the ASMJS stuff, to take a look at this, because... as computers get faster, as it becomes faster to do these sorts of compilation things, and we can see some real benefit from this. So,
right. Yeah, I think I have seen some games that were ported.
Yeah. There was a demo that maybe we can, or maybe a couple more demos. I couldn't find it. I couldn't track it down for this month, but maybe next month we'll walk through and try to do a video capture of a live demo of something, because there's some pretty impressive stuff that's been happening with WebGL sped up JavaScript or video stuff in the past few months. Anyway, I didn't want to dwell on that too much, but kind of a follow-up to what we've talked about, some of the stuff we talked about in the past.
Yeah, well, I think this is great, and as we already mentioned before, I think more... heavier CPU-intensive applications could be ported to JavaScript and eventually run on any browser.
Sure.
Okay, well, with this, basically, we have covered most of the news topics that have been happening lately in the JavaScript world. So we are going to move on to comment on the... Innovation Award nominees and winners. Let me screen share it here so everybody can see it. Let me increase the font. This time we are going to talk about the nominees of March, which were voted on April. And so in May the results came out, and we've got four nominees. There are not many, but they are good. Michael, which ones would you like to comment?
Well, this was the other Canvas thing that I was thinking about. It wasn't. I got my canvases all messed up. This first one here, I'm sharing my screen. Can you see my screen up? Yeah, this is.
Yeah.
I don't know where that went. Why am I? Yeah, this is a jQuery plugin to convert an image from color to grayscale. This is from Raul Molnar from Romania. Hello, Raul. Thank you. It returns a data URL that can be used to dynamically set. Yeah, another Canvas example here. And if we look at screenshot demo, we can see there's the original and there's the grayscale version. And interesting to me because, gosh, I'm going back 20 years, 18 years, 19 years. I was working with, no, it was actually 20 years ago. I was working with a friend on a project, and we were trying to do color manipulation of images. We were taking images and scanning them in, and I was trying to go through and do things like, let me go to grayscale, let me do something. Not in my naivete, I didn't know that there were already pre-written components that you could do to do this, and I was doing it all on BASIC on a 33 megahertz machine. It was taking forever, but this is the kind of stuff that we can do. Not only, hey, we've got faster computers, but we can do this directly in JavaScript, which is, I'm not going to say it's the BASIC of the 21st century, but it's a language that's available to everybody and pretty easy to get started with. So, right. Raul, congratulations. Thank you very much.
It's Canvas. Well, Canvas, there's a great potential for Canvas applications. I have developed a plugin for the my component for animations that I used the Canvas to draw those circles around the elements. So I just overlaid a canvas on the top of the element, just made some calculations, and the potential is there. It just depends on your imagination to use canvas for almost anything. So other than that, which other?
The other one I'll mention here is from Bob from Bulgaria. Hello, Bob. Let me share my screen. This is called YSpeed. I initially thought just by the name it had something to do maybe with Yahoo or YSlow, but it's just an object which will convert between kilometers per hour, miles per hour, and knots. Interesting to me in that kilometers and miles per hour I can kind of do in my head, though if you were going to do this on the screen, you'd still need something to do the calculations. But I was flying a couple times trying to pull this up again, and I still couldn't actually figure out. I was seeing the plane speed in knots at some point at one of the things, and I could not figure out how fast we were going. But here's the raw calculations. Straightforward. But this is a nice small class that will convert these back and forth for you.
Yes, that's quite simple, but it's always effective, and I'll not say that you probably need this specific component to do those calculations because they are very simple, but for people that are learning, they are always very useful.
Sure.
For whoever wants to learn and see, even how simple things can be done. So on my part, I also want to comment a couple of classes, objects. I never know which would be the right way to say it, because if I say those are classes, some people will complain. If they say they are objects, it probably be abstract, and people, this is the JS classes site, it has objects.
Yeah.
Well, people, it will never be possible to please everybody, so I'll always say classes and then say the objects. And in this case, it's another great contribution from Artur Sosins from the distant Latvia. And this time he did an interesting object that can be used to somehow help you playing that Fallout 3 game. I was not even aware what was this game because...
You're not a gamer. I'm not either.
I used to be a gamer when I was, like...
Okay.
Until college, I was to play games. But then I decided that I should do more serious software and stop playing games. Actually, the real explanation is that I don't have time to do the work, even less to play games. But games are very popular, and from what I understood, I had to study what was this Fallout game to write a detailed description and even the nomination text that I always write by myself. And after analyzing what each component does to clarify and explain why this object is being nominated, I had to study this this game, and from what I understood, it was a game on which you have to go to rooms, and some rooms have terminals, and you have to break in the terminals to access the information, and you have to go through different attempts to get to guess passwords, and you get hints from the system when the passwords are not correct. So with those hints, you can figure which letters may be right or not. And so Artus developed this component to help you break in the password system, because it's actually very dumb, the password system. It was meant to be broken, but Artus developed this component that in just a few attempts it guarantees that you succeed in accessing the terminals and moving on the game.
Excellent.
Well, so Michael, you were not aware about this game, right?
Not a gamer.
You are very cool. You are ancient.
I played Ultima 2. Okay.
Well, that's not bad. Oh, I don't play anything at all, but I keep an eye on games just because my son is very addicted to them, and he's always trying to find more games. Although he likes a lot of games about first person shooters and the likes. So I was not aware about this Fallout 3 game, because it's not the type of the game it plays. But okay, thank you to Hartus for his great contribution. It was certainly a fun component, and I'm sure several people will find it interesting if they play this game Fallout 3. Other than that, the other component that I want to mention is
from Javier Camelis,
yeah,
from Argentina.
Yes, exactly. Well, Javier developed a simple but interesting component that lets you access multiple values of a race in a single call, if I can put it right. And this is interesting because it sort of reflects the fact that sometimes people are sort of, I would say, bored of having to set lots of array values, and they have to go through lots of function calls, and if they can do it either in a single call, they will probably be more productive. Well, that's my interpretation of the use of this.
I couldn't quite figure out if it was meant to be a multi-dimensional array or not. I sort of thought it was, but it might not be exactly. It might be something else.
Yeah. Well, that's the idea. Just set or get the values of multiple keys all at once.
Sure.
So it's a sort of minor enhancement to what arrays can already do. You can assign and get values, but you don't have a more express way to do it in many values at once. Well, that's an interesting take. Certainly something that I could not expect for a component in JavaScript or any other language. So thank you, Javier, for his contribution. And with this, we are practically reaching the end of this podcast. Michael, do you want to comment on the issues of the JS Mag magazine?
Sure. Well, it's a couple things. Actually, I brought the screen up here to share just some of the topics for this month's issue. And shoot, I have the wrong image up there for some reason. The topics, Janine Meyer is with us again. Is that, I'm sharing my screen, am I not? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. There we go. Janine Meyer walking through another tutorial on moving transparent images. Lars Kontoff, hope I'm saying his name correctly, has a second installment on his series on graphing with D3. D3.js is sort of a hotness in graphing in the JavaScript world, but it's not an easy, it's certainly not as easy as the YUI charts or the Google charts. It definitely has a different approach to data visualization altogether. Chandan Lutra has been writing for us for a while, and he has a piece on the main tag in HTML5 and what you can do with that and what that means in the HTML5 spec. And I don't have the description here for Chetan's piece, but some security article, some information on security in HTML5. And then Justin, as always, keeps us up to date with some of the news going on. So that's our June issue.
Well, that's great. Well, with this, you practically ended this hangout. I really wanted to announce something regarding the upcoming system reputation that is I've been developing for the last months, but I've been too busy. I was not able to launch it in last month as I hoped, but I'm very eager to launch it and tell about it. So since it is not yet ready, I have to skip it to not spoil the surprise.
We'll talk about it and demo it next month, maybe.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it will. Next month will be the birthday of the PHP classes site. It's already a site that is already a teenager. It's going to be 14.
Wow.
And since all the developments that go in PHP classes and JS classes are done in parallel, all the features of one site are practically appear on the other site. We'll also comment about this next month because I want to launch it certainly before the birthday, which, if I'm not mistaken, is on 24th. So with this, we practically ended the podcast. Michael, thank you again for coming. And on my part, that's all for now. Bye.
Adios.